Welcome home, everyone. I'm glad to see you all. Let's take a deep breath and bring yourself in presence. I didn't hear another deep breath. We'd like to begin our class by taking ourselves into our deep center, and we do that through the sound of Om. So let's join voices and make the sound of Om together. Taking three breaths. Deep in breath. The Tree of Life. This is actually a bit of a show. We're not going to talk too much about the life, but it makes an interesting introduction. Well, here we go. The Tree of Life. The Blessed Lord said, "The wise speak of an eternal tree of life, with its roots above and its branches here in this world." That's interesting. Mm-hmm. I thought we ought to accompany this with a picture. So here's that tree of life with its roots above and its branches here in the world. And the tree of life is a metaphor for all life, including our life. Rather, it's a metaphor for how we mostly experience life and mostly experience what's real. There's another place we can go in addition to experiencing the tree of life. The wise speak of an eternal tree with its roots above and its branches here in the world. It was one way yesterday, another today, and it will be different again tomorrow. Sorry. Welcome, Jan.
Welcome, Jan.
So the tree is not a permanent thing. It changes all the time. And that reflects the way we experience life. All right? We experience ourselves changing. We're experiencing circumstances changing. We even experience politics changing. The tree of life, it was one day yesterday, another today, and it will be different again tomorrow. It buds forth all the sense objects, and its roots reach down to this world, binding people to one action after another. It buds forth all sense objects. So the tree of life buds forth all the things we sense, the things we see, the things we hear, things we taste, things we touch, the things we smell. That's the tree of life. Budding forth all the sense objects, one way yesterday, different today, different tomorrow. And it roots, I don't quite understand how this is supposed to work, by the way, but this is the scripture. Its roots reach down to the world. How do the roots reach down when they're pointing up? But anyway, use your imagination. Binding people to one action after another. So part of life is somehow binding one action after another. It's hard to see in ourselves, but we can see it in others. It seems to be doing one thing after another. Do one thing, there's a response to another thing. Action, response, response, action. Tree of life. The true nature of this tree, its form, origin, end, and even its presence, is not perceived at the level of worldly awareness. So how did the fellow who wrote this know about it if it's not perceivable at the level of worldly awareness? It's somewhat of a metaphor. The tree is not perceived through our awareness. We're like the fish swimming in the sea. And if you ask the fish, how does the water feel? It says, what water? Water. So that's us. We're swimming in a world of awareness, which we don't perceive these underlying things. And then the word is, cut down this deep-rooted tree of life with the sharp sword of non-attachment. In other words, we are so bound to action, reaction, the reality of our what we experience. Can we cut down, not that the tree vanishes, but that it no longer is the master of our life. And we do that with a sharp sort of non-attachment. And that's really what we're going to talk about today, non-attachment. What's the value of non-attachment? Why do we want to go there? What are the benefits of non-attachment? Non-attachment doesn't mean that we don't have things. Just means the things don't have us.
We're open.
We have things. They don't have us. We got cars, houses, spouses, friends, our own bodies. But they don't have us. We know they come and they go. Whoever we were 100 years ago was something different than what we are now. And something different than what will be 100 years from now. And according to our insights, there is something that persists. It was there 100 years ago, here today, be there 100 years from now. It has many different names, none of which really quite work. Today, Rev. Russ called it the Christ consciousness. It's called the soul. In the scriptures, it's called the Atman, A-T-M-A-N. And translated to English, it will be called capitalist self. That's what persists. That's what is really real because it doesn't change. Everything else in the tree of life is changing all the time, just like we are. So let's look at some techniques to get in touch with that. Because all of these teachings are meant to touch something within us. They are not meant to be the absolute truth. Rather, they are meant to point to the absolute truth that's in us. To the extent that that absolute truth comes forth, the teachings are successful. To the extent that these teachings don't bring forth an aha moment in us, well, either we're just not ready or these aren't the teachings for us. But here we are looking to see if they evoke some aha experience in us. And then that aha experience will stay with us long after we forget the teachings. Fortunate are those seekers who are no longer deluded by the tree of life and thus liberated from pride, because they have conquered personal attachments. They ever abide in their true identity, which is self, which we've been talking about. So So somehow we need to be liberated from pride in order to abide in our true identity. Now we all know what pride is. Pride is when I'm sorry, but I'm right and you're wrong. I'm here to inform you. Pride. I'm right. Is there anyone among us that doesn't enjoy being right? Is there anyone among us who doesn't have an aversion to being made wrong? Right. Like when someone makes you wrong.
Yeah, you feel darker, heavier,
and says,
shame. Yeah.
What's the matter with you, Sam? What's your problem, Kathy?
Yeah.
And we feel made wrong. Or sometimes it's just something that we've said or created, and someone says, well, that's a nice thing you created, but there's this issue with it. I'm here to point it out. And I have to because I'm right, and I thought you want to know you're wrong about this thing that you...
So is it then the self-consciousness to realize that we're in that judgment mode or thought? Is that how you break out of it? How do you undo that pattern?
That's the next few slides. The first thing in all these spiritual practices is to notice and just ascertain, oh, okay. I notice I'm being right. Or I notice they're in the process of being right. And I feel being made wrong. Now, that's a tough one to overcome, because usually when you feel like someone's made you wrong, it gets you someplace in your heart or your back or neck or someplace, so it's hard to press through that, because that feeling of being made wrong immediately gets put in your body. Something it does for me anyway. It's a challenge, and we can do it, and we'll learn some techniques today. Conquered personal attachments, they ever abide in their true identity, which is self, no longer disturbed by personal desires to have you like what I did. Accept me for who I am. No longer disturbed by that sort of desire, which have completely abated, or the pairs of opposites, such as pleasure and pain, they attain that eternal goal. We may never attain the eternal goal, and it doesn't matter. What matters, I assert, is that we're on the path and taking steps here and there in that direction. Who of us is not attached to pleasure and pain, who enjoys a little bit of sweets now and then?
She had a cookie. Not alone.
And who among us doesn't have an aversion to getting stung by a bee? Ouch. Or mosquitoes. There's a lot of them still around these days. Who doesn't have an aversion? No longer disturbed by opposites such as pleasure and pain, they attain that goal. It doesn't mean that perhaps we don't sense those pleasures and pains, but somehow we're able to step back from them. How do we do that? That's what we'll talk about today. Unless someone already knows. Here's the commentary. What a beautiful sloka. This is Satchitananda. These verses. Who will reach the eternal goal? Here are the qualifications, he says. Liberated from pride and delusion. How did we get there? Liberated from pride. I'm right. They're wrong. They think they're right. They think I'm wrong. But I know better. I'm right. And they're wrong. They're the wrong color. We have two colors, right? Red and blue?
Oh, yeah.
Right,
yeah.
I'm the right color, they're the wrong what color? What's the matter with him?
I'm not claiming either color. Color.
You're an independent?
I am an independent.
Liberated from pride and delusion, because pride and delusion are part of the mind. And that's what we're going to talk about today, the mind. That's the real subject of our talk today, the mind. It's a good idea to call it the mind instead of our mind, by the way, because we want to learn how to take a step back on the mind. So calling it our mind,
like we have it,
is not as useful as calling it the mind.
Right.
Helps us to start to get a little perspective. Here we go.
It's a good distinction. Mm-hmm.
You must be free from your body, ego, and mind to free yourself from pride and delusion. So we've got some free of the body. That's a challenge. The bee stings us. The cake tastes good. The ego, I'm right, you're wrong. And the mind. The mind. There's a favorite saying that I use frequently when I get trapped in my mind, which is, can you step back from your own mind and thus understand all things? If we have time, we'll do a little exercise where you can experience stepping back from your own mind. We'll have to fit it in. It's the mind that takes pride, not you. It's the mind that becomes deluded. It's the mind that becomes attached to things. Who enjoys pleasure or dislikes pain? The answer is?
The mind.
Again, the mind. Can we start to move to this consciousness? Let's look to see what that would be like.
Could we also substitute the word mind with like an opinion? That somehow it sits more, I resonate with that better, the word opinion versus the mind.
What is contained in the mind?
Opinions.
Pardon?
Opinions.
And? Anything else?
Thoughts.
Thoughts. Mm-hmm. Anything else? What's your mind contain?
Judgments.
Judgments?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thinking. You know.
Evaluation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Interpretation.
Emotion.
Translation.
Mm-hmm. Intellectual.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Einstein did mind experiments, remember? That's how he figured out the law of relativity. He went into his mind and did experiments. So there are many things in our minds, in addition to opinions and judgments, and so on. We all have minds, if we think about it.
And they're busy.
They're mostly busy, and they're mostly on automatic, aren't they? Mm-hmm. Our minds.
You have them, you control them.
Right.
I mean, we can't all control them, but we can get in the habit of being open and thoughtful.
One of the things you can
mindfulness.
Do. Mindfulness.
That's what I'm
mindfulness.
Being mindful of mm-hmm. things.
And
around
what
us.
I'm hoping we experience and learn for today is mindlessness.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Mindlessness.
Yeah.
We all have minds. One of the things I do in my morning walk is I give myself a particular amount of time to let my mind think about whatever it wants to think about. And then I have another part of the walk where I meditate and focus on particular things. Sometimes the mind will jump in and start thinking about whatever it wants to think about anyway, and I have to bring it back to what my resolution is. And I notice when I let my mind wander, it wanders to this, and oh, that's red, and red is the color of that. And it just jumps all over the place. Minds are wonderful how they can jump around from one thing to the next.
Very busy.
So we certainly don't want to denigrate the mind or its wonderful capabilities, but can we step back from our minds, especially in crises or traumas, and know that we have a mind, and perhaps it's not us that's going through this, perhaps who we really are, Atman, capital Self, is something other than the mind. So who is happy? Who is unhappy? The mind. Mind. If we can start to look at it from that perspective, it gives us a little bit of perspective, so that we are not so much under the influence of mind. Who is happy? My mind is unhappy. Oh, my mind is happy today.
But you're not talking about the brain, then.
The brain is a physical thing.
Because if you're in pain, it's kind of hard to block all that out with your mind. I mean, you can try, but if you're in trying to do your walk and in pain, it's hard.
If you're experiencing pain, and I heard you say it's hard, the recommendation here is, can you get underneath that and see perhaps that perhaps, again, we have to find our own truth here, my mind and my places in my body are experiencing the pain, but I am not. That's the leap. My mind.
It's a real leap.
It is. It's a true leap. My mind is experiencing the pain, and parts in my body are giving me sensations. So I got a mind, I got parts of body. Mind is experiencing the pain and associating parts of my body. But there's something else that is not. That's something we have to see if we can get in touch with. So here we go. Satchitananda says, who is happy, who is unhappy? The mind. But you, the real you who is the self, know this. So he might say, you know that you were in pain. There's a part of you that knew that, and the part of you that knew that you were in pain wasn't in pain.
Is this the witness?
Witness, the observer, the witness. The witness part of you says, wow, this hurts. Wow, this hurts. And the witness part. It's a leap. And we have to choose if this is a direction we want to travel in and see if this is really true for us. I don't know. It's a personal thing. So that's what you say. I know I was unhappy yesterday, or I was in pain yesterday. I know something happened to me this morning, and I feel wonderful. And I know I'm unhappy now. What's common here? I know. There's some witness in there, knowing. So Satchitananda is going to give us a little logic here to persuade us to look at these things as being separate from our essence. Yes.
You may be going into this. Does Satchitananda talk differently about the ego, or does he equate the ego with the mind? Sort of the small self.
He talked about the body, ego, mind. It's a matter of semantics. I suppose we could say the mind and the ego are... You sort of have to look for what the truth is for us beyond the intellectual,
right,
and use these words to help us travel to the truth and not let the words be stumbling blocks. So if you want the ego to be part of the mind, okay.
Yeah, I was just wondering if you separated them or defined them differently.
He mentioned body, ego, mind, so we can make a case for that. Mm-hmm. But we don't want to distract ourselves from the real issue here, which is there is something that was unborn when we were born. We experience it somehow now, or can. And we're told that it's going to be around after the body dies and disintegrates. We may not be sure. So perhaps through our spiritual practices, we're looking for an experience of that other thing. An experience of it. Not necessarily to be reassured that there's something of me that's going to stay around after I die. No. No, that's an expectation that will lead you to grief. No, the experience of now. There's something in me that's not the pain I'm experiencing, but is observing me. It's not the happiness idea. So we'll call it the mind to get through the talk today.
Okay.
What's common here? I don't know, the observer. If something really happened to you, the capital S self, you wouldn't be able to know it. So if that part of you that is observing, something happened to it, well, it wouldn't be around to observe anymore. He's making a little logical play here. Certainly you had lost the capacity even to know. But see this, your knowing remains unchanged. We don't want to be persuaded one way or the other by this intellectual argument. It's just an opportunity for us to explore. We can have a sense of this capitalist self. So then, what happened to whom? The mind was happy yesterday, something disturbed it this morning. But you say, I know both. See, as the knower, you are not affected by the mind. If you, your real self, were unhappy, how would you know you're unhappy? A bit of an intellectual argument. Bottom line is, it's an invitation for us to press through our intellectual arguments and to have an experience of our minds. Why don't we do an exercise? This might be a good opportunity to do that now after all this thinking. An exercise to experience the mind. Can you step back from your own mind and thus know everything? So here's the little exercise we're going to do. And while we do this exercise, I invite you to watch yourself doing it. Are you with me? So you'll follow the exercise, and I invite you to watch yourself doing it. Watch your mind doing it. You ready? Here's the exercise. We're going to visualize that we have these immense powers. And the powers are as follows. I'll stand and demonstrate it. You can see it. When I breathe in, I suck up the whole earth through my body. And it cleans me out and fills the universe. As I breathe out, the whole universe comes back through my body and turns and fills Mother Earth. Got it? As I breathe in, all Mother Earth comes up through me, fills the universe. As I breathe out, all the universe goes through me, cleans me out, and fills Mother Earth. Questions? Got it? So let's do it yourself. Breathing in. Breathing out. Breathing in. Breathing out. Now the next time, notice that you're doing this. Breathing in. Breathing out. Watch your mind doing this. Breathing in. Breathing out. Just three more on your own. maybe we could just stay with this visualization for the remainder of the class. Isn't it a beautiful
mm-hmm.
conceptualization?
Mm-hmm.
Did you experience total cleansing as the earth rose up through you? Feel the universe. Experience it. Did you experience as the universe came down through you back to fill Mother Earth? Total cleansing of you. As the breath cleansed your body going up and coming down, were you able to take a tiny step backward and notice you are having this experience? Take a tiny step and notice. Observing the body being cleansed. Isn't it wonderful to have a clean body through this exercise, and the mind cleansed also? Mind is part of your body. Isn't it wonderful to have all of your opinions and judgments and considerations along with everything in your body cleansed and given to the universe? The power of the earth, and then all the power of the universe come back through you and re-cleanse you again and restore Mother Earth. Would anyone like to share anything with regard to this experience before we press on?
Seems to be more of a truth in the silence than any words that I might speak.
Mm-hmm. When we experience something fully, without being distracted, that's real for us, isn't it? Even if we later on find out another reality, it's real in the moment. Yes.
I'm more familiar with Buddhism and Theravada Buddhism, and so I really think it's a great exercise of distancing yourself, you know, and then looking down in your mind on yourself, automatically sort of creates some breathing room if there's a problem that you're kind of wrapped up in. And so I'm grateful for the example. Thank you.
You're welcome. This is an example of a spiritual technique. I will present many different spiritual techniques. And the ones that work for you are the ones you will want to adapt. I uncovered this one, I don't know when, and I've been using it for several months now in my morning meditation walk. I find it more satisfying than some of the other. So you can choose. Here we go. See, we've got a few more minutes. No, he's back now and in some intellectualism, and he wants to give us a laugh because he's now a little serious, isn't it? It's as if an insane man were to come forward and say he's insane. I'm crazy as a hatter. Immediately you're certain that he's not insane. No insane person will say I'm insane. Instead, he'll argue, who says I'm insane? I'm perfectly normal. What's the matter with you? he is insane, so he can't see his condition accurately. So that's insanity. However, in your case, the knowing is correct. The knowing you experience, that you witnessed or referenced, you know you are whatever. The mind is unhappy, the mind is experiencing a visualization, the mind is experiencing pain, so on. So we have a mind, and the mind is doing all this. But can the knower really be unhappy, or does the knower just know something else is unhappy? And that's how he recommends a spiritual technique to analyze. So that's what he puts forth. So ask yourself, can my Christ consciousness, or my capitalist self, really be unhappy, or does that knower just know that something else, my mind, something in my senses is happy? That's one way. Keep asking yourself, am I doing this? As you lift the log, you ask, am I lifting the log? No, my mind wants it lifted. My hands are helping. The real one is just watching. My mind has a desire to do this. It directed the body here. And then it said to the hands, come on, lift that log, put it there. And the body is obeying the mind. It's true, literally, you are the eternal witness. You're the eternal witness. It's about, we're going to close now, if you want to hold on for 1 second, and we'll close. We're going to do it on.
Okay.
We're all done.
Okay. I just don't want a choir director to fuss.
So we don't want our choir director to be nervous. We're at a point of closing here. So we're going to support Jan being
I could be happy.
Perfect.
My choir director, I don't want that.
So let's begin by taking 3 conscious breaths. And with a deep in breath. Shanti, shanti, shanti. May we go in peace. And may our choir director be so to see us and say, thank you for not having come any sooner. This is the perfect time. You're welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you,
Steve.
Thank you, Steve.
Thank you.